Now, President Biden focused much of his campaign in early days in office on taking a more humane approach to immigration. The bill he's proposed to Congress would create new pathways to citizenship, and his executive orders have undone some of the Trump administration's harsher immigration rules. But a new rise in migration at the U.S.-Mexico border is putting that approach to the test. This January, the rate of apprehensions near the border was more than double that of the same month last year, and the number of migrant children in U.S. custody has tripled in the past 2 weeks, now more than 3,000. Some responses from the Biden administration include reopening a temporary detention facility in Texas and waiving certain COVID-19 safety measures. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or your family been affected by the immigration system now or in the past? What do you think the future of immigration policy should look like? Do you want to see Congress take up reforms to the system? And what questions do you have about the situation now at the southern border? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dara Lind is an immigration reporter for ProPublica. Dara, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be back.
I just mentioned a couple of broad statistics there, but can you put some context to the numbers for us and paint a picture of what's going on right now at the southern border?
Sure. So we actually, we just got the numbers for February, which confirm the trend that you were just describing of what is, you know, certainly compared to the last few years, pretty unusually high levels of people getting arrested attempting to enter the United States. Now, there is something of an apples to oranges thing going on here, because one of the Trump administration policies that the Biden administration has not yet changed is what's called the Title 42 order, which was using a fairly obscure public health law to have the CDC issue a proclamation that anyone who was coming into the United States from Mexico could be carrying coronavirus and therefore needed to be expelled as quickly as possible. So they've been using that to prevent single adults and families from even trying to seek asylum in the United States and, you know, sending them back to Mexico or deporting them within a matter of hours. That does, especially for those sent back to Mexico, make it easier for them to try again. So we do know that a fairly substantial number of what are now being reported as 100,000 arrests in February, a substantial number of those were kind of repeats over the course of the month. So it is a little bit inflated compared to past years when recidivism was very low because it took a much longer time to process someone and they were getting deported a longer distance, but it is still fairly high, especially when you think about the fact that usually, you know, January, February is the beginning of an upward slope that culminates in May or June. And by those standards, this is higher even than 2019, when by April, May, June, there was just massive overcrowding in Border Patrol facilities. That's kind of the real reason that this is relevant, right? Especially because, you know, most people are still getting expelled, so they really only matter for the numbers for academic reasons. But for people who are being held in the U.S., the capacity is really an issue. And that's especially true for unaccompanied children who are not subject to that CDC order and who, as you may recall from previous immigration debates in 2014 and 2019, are statutorily supposed to have extra protections in the United States. So we're already at the point where Border Patrol custody, as you mentioned, of unaccompanied kids is up. Those kids are only supposed to be in Border Patrol custody for 72 hours at most. And we're seeing reports that children are being held for days longer than that. And there's something of a problem with the facilities that are supposed to take them from Border Patrol, which are run by the Department of Health and Human Services, which had to restrict its capacity at its shelters for COVID reasons because it didn't want to operate at full capacity in, you know, congregate housing, which is known to be a big transmitter of the virus, and which has had to lift those capacity limits in order to accommodate the number of children that are getting taken in.
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki was asked last week about the administration's plans in regards to the accompanied minors you were just talking about and how many they were prepared to accept and house. Here's some of her response.
when these kids come in, it doesn't mean they are insured that they get to stay. They go through the processing system that everyone goes through. But we want to ensure that that is done by treating them humanely and with respect. Many of them will be sent back home eventually. But we're talking about how we treat them as they come in the country.
So, Dara, how are these kids being treated now in the country with, as you mentioned, the system for housing them while their fate is determined is overstressed?
There, the theory behind putting this under the responsibility of HHS instead of under the Department of Homeland Security is that this is supposed to be like more of a, you know, foster type environment. It's supposed to be a more supportive environment, and it's supposed to be temporary, right? The purpose of these shelters is that HHS officials are tasked with finding essentially the closest relative in the United States, who is usually a pretty close relative, either a parent, uncle, grandparent, something like that, and placing the child with them as a sponsor. Those transfers have also been slowed down a little bit due to the coronavirus pandemic. But you know, that's the goal. The problem is that these are contracted out to other operators, and there's kind of a spectrum of those operators, with some of them, especially some of the facilities that opened during the Trump administration, taking much more of a juvenile detention style approach that was, you know, that was closer to ICE or Border Patrol detention than certainly many advocates would have liked. And so by trying to expand capacity quickly, the concerns that the Biden administration is running into is that they're leaning on some of the same facilities and some of the same contractors who have in the past been seen as overly punitive toward these migrant kids.
Now, there's been argument about what is driving people to come to the U.S. now, especially from Central America. Some arguments saying people are seeing that President Trump is out, President Biden is in, their chances are better of getting in. They think they'll be treated better. You also write about, though, the conditions in the countries of origin getting worse, especially with recent hurricanes, on top of all the other issues, poverty and violence that were already driving people. What do we know about what's bringing people to the border now?
So I think we actually have to go back about a year, because the increase trend-wise actually dates from April of last year, because March and April was so incredibly, incredibly low in 2020 in terms of how many people were crossing into the United States, because that was the first real coronavirus, like worldwide lockdown, lots of travel restrictions in place. People were very worried, didn't really understand what was happening, didn't really know what came next. And so since then, we've seen a slow and then less slow increase in the number of people coming. And so, you know, so some of that is probably people who, you know, might have come a year ago, but were deterred then, and, you know, making plans now instead. And some of it is that, you know, Central America and Latin America more broadly, like anyone who's employed in the informal economy is really in trouble. The job loss is just catastrophic. They haven't been, many of these are countries that haven't done a tremendous job of containing the virus. And Central America got struck by two hurricanes at the end of last year. So it's really all of the things that we kind of know about long term in terms of reasons why people might choose to, you know, emigrate and come to the United States are so much more true. I was talking to people at the end of last year who were saying that what are called the push factors, if you think about migration, is what's pulling you to go to another place and what's pushing you to leave your home. Like, those push factors were at a crisis point. And between that and the sense that it's always a little bit tricky to pin down exactly how much information people have about the policies in the country they're going to. Like, most Americans don't know asylum policy in a great amount of detail. It's, you know, kind of ludicrous to think that migrants themselves would. But there is often a certain sense when a new president comes into office, with Donald Trump being the kind of exception to this, of, oh, maybe this will be a change in policy. And so you are seeing a little bit of that facilitated by misinformation from smugglers, who have every incentive in the world to say, now is your chance. You have to, you know, like, now is really when you want to take out a loan and pay me so that you can get in, because Biden's opening it up.
We're talking to Dara Lind, immigration reporter for ProPublica, about the recent increase in people crossing the southern border, what it means for those migrants and for immigration enforcement. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How have you felt about President Biden's approach to immigration so far? What do you want to see from the Biden administration when it comes to immigration issues? What do you want to see from Congress? Are you hoping that they will take up the long-delayed issue of immigration and border security reform? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Dara Lind, immigration reporter for ProPublica, looking at an increase of migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border and how that's testing the Biden administration. You can join in if you have thoughts on the issue at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Dara, we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line who wondered if detained immigrants were getting tested for COVID and had any kind of quarantine requirements. How is that being handled, Dara?
This has been a really big question because when it comes to people who are being processed in at the border, they're often not being held in detention. The very few people who are getting in who were enrolled in the migrant protection protocols, so-called under the Trump administration, which the Biden administration is now very slowly unraveling, those folks aren't getting detained for that long. They're getting released to, you know, nonprofit organizations. They're being allowed to reunite with family who's in the United States. And so the quarantine question is super relevant in that context. And things are a little bit tough to gauge here. The federal government isn't taking direct responsibility for testing. It's saying that, you know, it's routing FEMA money to states to, you know, help deal with the kind of testing and quarantining issue themselves. At least one governor, the governor of Texas, unsurprisingly, Governor Abbott, has said, no, we refuse this money. These families should be getting sent to ICE. They shouldn't be in our communities, and has kind of turned that into something of a political football. But more generally, it does kind of raise the dual strain that that both the government itself and nonprofits are facing when you're looking at people coming, you know, into the United States. Is you do want to, you know, you do have to take in as many people as possible as quickly as possible so that they don't languish in government custody. But at the same time, we don't have a good sense of how that is supposed to work during a pandemic because people haven't been getting in during the pandemic before. There is a kind of related problem of, you know, the ICE detention system has, like any prison system in the United States, has had kind of rampant COVID cases for the entire pandemic. Like there haven't been pandemic waves in prisons for the most part, and ICE prisons are no exception to that. Some of them have been forced to reduce their capacity because a lot of people who are in ICE custody, it's a matter of government discretion. There's no law saying they have to be. And so there have been some court orders, you know, trying to get them to release some folks. But even those decisions are often, you know, subject to interpretation or subject to slow walking. And now that it's a Democratic administration in office, there is beginning to get to be some pushback from Republican states who are arguing that the government really shouldn't be releasing anybody at all.
You mentioned earlier, Dara, smugglers are selling the message to people that this is a good time to try to cross the American border and pay those same smugglers. You write that the Biden administration is at least trying to do a PR campaign to say, in fact, no, don't come. This is not a good time. What kind of things are we seeing there?
I mean, a lot of it is just that it's part of their standard barrage of talking points on this issue, right? Roberta Jacobson, who is at the National Security Council handling U.S.-Mexican border issues, did a briefing in the White House press room today. And from the White House,
I think we lost Dara.
Press room, she was like,
there.
Okay. Oh, have we? Sorry.
Oh, no, you're back. You cut out just for a minute. Great. So sorry. From the White House press room, you were saying, she said.
Apparently, my connection just doesn't like speaking Spanish. But yeah, so Roberta Jacobson was saying, you know, La frontera está cerrada, the border is closed, which I'm sure mattered a lot to all would-be migrants who were watching C-SPAN on a weekday afternoon. But like, it is kind of, it's a fairly standard move. The Obama-Biden administration did this. The Trump administration did a certain amount of it, just using government officials to say, don't believe what you hear. It's not open. You can't come. Even in that clip you played earlier, Jen Psaki saying, you know, most of these kids will ultimately get sent back. It's not that that doesn't have any effect. It's just that it's really hard to accurately map out the landscape of where people are hearing what they're hearing from. And right now, in the midst of such uncertainty, in the midst of kind of so many changes, not just at the US-Mexico border, but with other countries' mobility policies as well, it doesn't, you know, it's always a little bit ridiculous to assume that the government, that like the US government is going to have perfect control over what information that people decide is true. And it's, that's even more so in this, like in the current environment.
We're talking to Dara Lind, immigration reporter for ProPublica, looking at an increase in migrants at the US-Mexico border and the Biden administration policy on those issues so far. Let's bring on a caller now. Keith is with us in St. Paul. Keith, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up,
Keith? Thanks for taking my call. Well, I just want to raise an issue that I rarely hear discussed with regards to immigration, and that's that they're an important source of increasing the nation's labor pool. Most economists point to the fact that in the near future, if we're not already there, we're facing a labor shortage. So to some extent, we're cutting off our nose to spite ourselves by denying immigration to the extent that it's occurred in the past. And a related issue is the funding of the Social Security system. I would imagine thousands of your listeners think that their Social Security is some dedicated savings account from themselves, when the reality is it's that the money's that being paid in by current workers, and that money is insufficient. The system will be cutting benefits and...
Gotcha. Keith, I want to jump in because we don't have too much time left, but I take your point. And Dara, can you talk about paths to, I think the people that Keith is talking about, people wanting to come into the country and work as legally as possible and pay into things like Social Security. What is the pipeline, the system looking like for them right now?
Even to the extent that those paths were available, you know, a limited number of work visas, et cetera, many of those are still subject to Trump administration proclamations from last year, severely restricting various categories of work visas in order to allow the American economy to recover from the pandemic, which is like obviously not the view of the economy that the Biden administration has, but they're still taking a relatively they're still taking a partial approach or a slower approach to rolling all of that back. There's, for most people though, those options simply aren't available. And really, you know, a lot of people, even those who believe that there should be more of an enforcement centered approach at the US-Mexico border for people coming in, you know, a lot of them will say, look, many of these people are just, you know, are primarily economic migrants. They're primarily here to work. If we expanded pathways for them to immigrate legally, we wouldn't have so many people, quote unquote, clogging the asylum system like this. Even kind of bracketing the question of whether or not that's true, because I think that over the last half decade, we've really seen that climate change, that institutional governance issues, a lot of things can, you know, transnational criminal organizations that aren't like the government can blur the line between when somebody is just kind of opportunistically migrating and when they're being forced to migrate. But even kind of setting that aside, that's where you really can't make policy as an executive branch. You need Congress to set visa levels. And Congress has been, for a very long time, extremely resistant to anything that would increase the pool of immigrants. So, you know, the Biden administration does have, as you mentioned, this, you know, early bill that is supposed to be a marker for what it wants to see from the immigration system. We're seeing more targeted legalization bills, and there absolutely is a push to allow essential workers, which is kind of a way in which immigrant labor has become more visible in the last year, as categories of people like grocery store workers, you know, and health aides who were previously seen as kind of lesser forms of labor are now being recognized for, you know, how much the economy needs them to run and how much people need them. There are pushes to include them in any kind of legalization package, but it's really going to be a question of
whether immigration is an issue that the current Congress feels like tackling after the massive COVID bill that it's, you know, just passed, and the massive whatever the heck they're calling it infrastructure bill that is coming next.
In our last minute or so, Dara, obviously a long-standing issue there, but a lot of fast-moving pieces now. What are you watching for next?
I think that the Biden administration is going to be under increasing pressure to justify the continued existence of this CDC order, which is now understood to have been politically motivated by the Trump administration. And they may not have the capacity to deal with it, but it does implicate issues of a humanitarian law, because families and single adults currently aren't being allowed to seek asylum. And that is, even if they, you know, regardless of how urgent the need is, and that's going to become an issue the longer it goes on.
Dara, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dara Lind is an immigration reporter at ProPublica. She talked with us today about a rise in migration across the U.S.-Mexico border we've seen this year and what it means for the Biden administration's approach to immigration issues.